You're listening to the Doheny Podcast Network, the Doheny Eye Institute, working for all to see. Your host is Jody Becker.
In part two of my conversation with Doheny Eye Institute's CEO and Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. Vas Sada, we'll talk about how collaborations and communications accelerate the quest to cure macular degeneration and other eye diseases. We start close to home. Dr. Sada, how do patients benefit from this alliance between the Doheny Eye Institute and the Jules Stein Eye Institute?
We have a great network of researchers, scientists, ophthalmologists around the world who, of course, share many of our passions, share this desire to really try to tackle these blinding disorders. And we have a strong belief. It's been sort of a core belief of Doheny that we can get to these cures that we all want much faster if we can work together, leverage all of our resources at our different institutions. And so one of our real hopes, dreams, ambitions for the future is that at Doheny, we really be that central centerpiece or that really the springboard that allows these sort of big collaborations to happen.
Can you talk about how the doctor's work at Doheny is complemented by the work at the UCLA Jules Stein Eye Institute?
Yeah, again, this is really a historic and unprecedented affiliation to have two major worldwide leading eye institutes really join forces in this way. I think together we've created, the biggest and best, in my opinion, departments of ophthalmology in the world. And what's been really gratifying to me in particular is that, each of us have specialists in different areas of ophthalmology and vision science research, but I've found that our research interests are very complementary, and they, rather than just be overlapping, they really are a very nice fit.
Can you talk a little bit about how patients might experience some of that complementary activity?
Well, I can even give an example from today where, we saw a very complicated patient who had, we don't know the diagnosis. It's so confusing, and we suspect that there may be some type of retinal degeneration, but we don't see any abnormalities in the retina, and we're able to interact. One of our colleagues at Stein, Michael Gorin, is a specific expert in retinal degeneration. That's his clinical and research focus. So we're able to interact, discuss these complicated diagnoses and to figure things out together. So essentially, our patients benefit obviously from having the combined technology of the two institutions, but also having this kind of access where they can essentially get a second opinion without even traveling over to the West Side because we have this type of collaboration and communication. And it goes in both directions. Certainly, I've seen patients referred to me from our colleagues at Stein that may have confusing diagnoses that may benefit from some of the unique technology and imaging devices and the like that we possess on this side.
Collaboration is a theme that you come to so often in your blogs. I know it's something that you really care a lot about, as well as communication styles. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about your philosophy and your experiences when it comes to the importance of international collaboration. You were talking about local efforts, but I'm wondering internationally, globally, why it matters so much, and especially when you have the team of world-class doctors that you have here in Los Angeles.
Eye diseases are global, and they're global problems. As big an institution or a combined, their affiliation, institutional, the sort of power, if you will, that we have, there's nothing like, establishing these kinds of global collaborations where we can actually, for example, tap into, we've got wonderful collaborations in India and China with huge eye institutes where they may not have the research background and experience and the like that we have, but they have they take care of a tremendous, just an astounding number of patients. I mean, hundreds of thousands, maybe over millions of patients patients that might come into their eye centers in a year. And we can help. We can work together. We can help them in conducting, you know, very careful, rigorous scientific studies. And it's a great partnership and opportunity for us, and allows, you know, our faculty locally to be even that much more productive in influencing the future direction of ophthalmology.
Doctor, you've also convened your colleagues from around the world to come to consensus in questions of research where language and definitions were sticking points. How does cleaning up the language accelerate research?
The problem when you have different people calling things different names as one example of disagreement or non-consensus is that when you do scientific studies and you study, for example, what happens in this disease to this structure with this treatment, and then you find yourself in a situation where, you know, you've done that study and someone else does a study, but they've interpreted the image completely differently or different names and the like, it makes it very confusing in terms of pooling data together across studies and trying to increase the power we have of drawing conclusions. So one of the really relevant topics or important topics of ophthalmology right now is an entity we call atrophy. And atrophy, in this case, I'm referring to atrophy of retinal tissue. And atrophy, of course, means loss of tissue. And you can imagine if you lose retinal cells, then you don't see. You go blind. And so atrophy is the end stage, for example, of macular degeneration. There are many different treatments that are now being considered that are in clinical trials for trying to slow down atrophy, prevent atrophy. But what we came to find out is that what I was calling atrophy may have been different from what my friend in New York was calling atrophy, or even for that matter, my friend down the across town at Jules Stein Eye Institute was calling atrophy. And that was a real problem. Can you imagine trying to do a study and you're trying to design a treatment for atrophy? You don't even know what atrophy is. It's pretty challenging, and that's not really a plan for a successful outcome there. And so how do you get to sort of a definition that we all can agree on, and that we say, "Yep, this is the target that we're going to go after for treatment." And so we tried to do that with exactly this type of consensus exercise. We brought together a group of experts who were experts and also interested in this field to come together. We had a very unique format. We made people do homework exercises in advance so we can sort of measure, you know, how close were we in terms of agreement, and then actually went through sort of a process where we talk through areas of disagreement and challenge people to say, okay, you know, you thought this, defend your position, give us the evidence. And then we were able to have everyone present their arguments, their evidence, and let the group as a whole said, okay, well, we weighed all the evidence. We think that, you know, there's the most merit for this idea.
So first, I want to say it's so interesting that you're seeking these somewhat low-tech solutions to some of these questions, which could have enormous impact on such intricate, high-tech scientific work to help deal with eye disease. And I'm wondering, what exactly kind of markers were you discussing with your colleagues in trying to define atrophy?
Well, it's just interesting that Jody, you said low-tech, actually, because you're right. I guess it's a low-tech process in terms of getting people together, sort of herding cats, if you will, and trying to get people to come to an agreement. That is definitely a very traditional method. But in terms of what we're considering, it's actually the pinnacle of high technology in terms of a technology to study atrophy. So we have actually what we call a multimodal approach. And multimodal means that you use a variety of different diagnostic tools to help inform your ultimate determination. We're using information from all of these technologies in a combined fashion to look for example, if you look on the OCT where you see the different layers, we're looking for, which layers are absent, which are thinned? How can you tell the difference between something that's thin and actually missing? Those are the kinds of deliberations one has. And then you come to a criteria and you say, well, you know, if it looks like you see this sharp edge or step off, we think that that cell is actually missing, and that actually is an area where the cell is lost, and there's atrophy present. So that's just a very specific example of the type of feature one might look for. But the reality is that we're using the sort of the cutting edge, state of the art available technologies, and trying to use all of them in an integrated fashion in order to actually come to a definition of atrophy.
Closer to home, you've also brought scientific colleagues in Pasadena together. Can you talk about that meeting?
The reality is that we've got a number of great research institutions in Southern California. And so, I had an idea. I said, why not get us all together? We're all working on some real cutting edge research. And maybe there's an opportunity for us to work together or collaborate. For example, maybe we've run into a roadblock in studying optic nerve diseases. For example, my colleague and our vice chair for the Department of Ophthalmology at Doheny UCLA is Alfredo Sadoun. And he's interested in, he's been actually the pioneer who's really studied the importance of mitochondria, which are the sort of energy factories in cells, and their relevance to specific eye diseases, including in particular optic nerve diseases. To better study this condition, it would be great if we had tools to actually image or better visualize these tiny mitochondria or these energy factories in the cells. And it turns out that there are researchers at JPL and Caltech who are innovators in terms of these types of imaging. Maybe for example, they might have developed imaging technologies to study the rocket plumes that come out of rockets when they blast off, and they can look for signatures of different molecules. Well, that same technology, for example, could be used to study signatures of different molecules or small organelles or other structures inside the eye. So if there's a way that you can get people together to get them to think out of the box and say, my technology that has nothing to do with ophthalmology may actually be helpful to you, and vice versa. And so already we've gotten some great research ideas. Thoughts have been generated for combined grants that we might write together. So I think, I'm really looking forward to seeing all of the different collaborations and grants and other ideas that come out of that workshop.
It's an interesting insight into the kind of institutional introspection that takes place and how you challenge yourself from within. Thanks for explaining that. My guest is Dr. Vas Sada, CEO and Chief Scientific Officer of the Doheny Eye Institute. Thank you for listening. Please join us again for our next episode.
The Doheny Eye Institute, at the forefront in eradicating eye disease for nearly 70 years, is dedicated to providing state-of-the-art clinical services and supporting leading researchers in the quest for treatments that stabilize and improve the precious sense of sight. Doheny is now affiliated with UCLA Stein Eye Institute. For more information about our doctors and their innovative work in the quest for better vision, visit our website, doheny.org.